Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Hiring picks up nationally, the jobless rate drops a notch, and here's some good news. A nice gain in manufacturing. Also, machinists working a first contract at an Apple store. Today on the show, we check in with the president of the American Postal Workers Union and the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees. Welcome to the Monday, May 8th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have presidents of two giant unions today. We're going to start things off with Mark Dimenstein. Mark is president of the American Postal Workers Union, which represents more than 200,000 employees of the Postal Service and approximately 1,500 workers in the private sector mailing industry. He's been a postal worker since 1983, so we're talking 40 years, and he was elected to his first three-year term as head of the union in November of 2013. And since taking office, boy, Mark has done a great job. He's transformed the union into what's called a fighting activist organization. He helped establish a grand alliance to save our public postal service, strengthen the unity among the four postal unions, helped forge the campaign for postal banking, and we'll touch on that, and led a successful fight against a privatization scheme involving the office supply chain staples. And in the union's recent contract fight, he outlined a vision that emphasizes the unity between the demands of postal workers for a good contract and the demands of the American people for an expanded, vibrant public postal service. And right now, Mark has a problem with staffing. The mail, which has been slowed down, is primarily due to staffing and service. High turnover of new postal workers. And we touched on this last week. The agency's inspector general reported that almost 59% of new hires last year quit, which is up from over 38% the year before. And they reported a lack of respect from supervisors and too many hours on the job. We have a problem here. And Mark is going to touch on that and a whole lot more. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Matt Biggs. Now, Matt is president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Website is ifpte.org. He's been in that position for almost 2 years. And prior to that, he served as secretary treasurer. This is a union, very diverse union, that advocates on behalf of 90,000 workers in professional, technical, administrative, and associated occupations in the United States as well as Canada. Members are employed by federal, public, and private employers. They balance the broad range of their members' interests by adhering to democratic processes and consensus building. One of the big issues that we're going to talk about with Matt is raising the debt ceiling. And as you know, there's a tug of war going on between the Democrats and the Republicans about this. But Matt, and this is all posted on their website, he's really concerned about pension plans. Currently, 42 applications are under review. We're talking about financial assistance funds for rescuing the multi-employer pension plans. Okay, 42 applications are under review. And over 100 pension plans are waiting their turn to file for financial assistance. The Pension Rescue Plan, this is the legislation that was passed in the House with bipartisan support in the 116th Congress as the Butch Lewis Act. We've done many, many shows on this. This could grind to a halt. This could grind to a halt. Also, termination of student loan debt forgiveness and cutting federal spending, which will have devastating impacts on our nation's vets, seniors, workers, public safety, and national security. Matt is of the opinion that underfunding government services means veterans will wait longer to receive services at the Veterans Health Administration. Retirees, they'll face delays and service cutbacks at Social Security field offices. Workers would lose job training and registered apprenticeship opportunities. Communities could be impacted by significant cuts to FBI personnel and federal support for the COPS hiring program. And some 4,500 wildland firefighters will be furloughed. And some 1 million people will lose mental health crisis support services. And an estimated 2 million Americans would lose access to health care provided by community health centers. That's at stake. That's at stake right now. Scary stuff. Matt Biggs, president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity options to clients nationwide. They've been doing this since 1928. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Well, hiring picked up in April as employers added 253,000 jobs despite the higher interest rates and also worries about a recession. So the jobless rate fell a notch from 3.5% to 3.4%, reclaiming a 54-year low. The employment rate for African Americans fell sharply for the second straight month to a record low of 4.7%. Average hourly earnings rose 16 cents to $33.36. Professional and business services led the April job gains with 43,000. Healthcare added 40,000. Leisure and hospitality, the sector hit hardest by the pandemic, added 31,000. And there was a sharp drop from its average pace in recent months in the financial sector. They dropped about 23,000. Construction added 15,000 jobs. Temporary help services shed 23,000 jobs. Manufacturing gained 11,000 jobs, and that prompted a comment from Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He said, while any gain in factory jobs is welcome news, April's addition is quite modest, and it's clear the sector has been stalled for a quarter. The Federal Reserve's rate hikes have taken a toll on manufacturing job growth, and I'm hopeful that will come to an end. Scott goes on to say, let's not forget the surge of new factory announcements over the past couple of years and the future jobs that they will support. That's a reason to be optimistic about American manufacturing as we look ahead. Scott Paul, the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org. Good guy. Also one of the many sponsors on the show. Workers at the first unionized Apple store, this would be in suburban Baltimore, are negotiating to demand higher pay, better benefits, and other business practices that have the potential to impact the company's historically tightly controlled retail experience. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, the workers are set to attend bargaining sessions with Apple this week. Among the proposals, 10% wage increases, changes to overtime and vacation policy, and a tipping system that would let customers offer gratuities to some of the employees. Let's go to Washington, where Governor Jay Inslee has signed into law a bill limiting worker productivity quotas of the sort utilized in Amazon warehouses. This is pretty fascinating. The law, which mirrors similar measures introduced in New York and California 2 years ago, comes as a result of the companies, we're talking Amazon, their use of productivity metrics that prioritize speed over safety and result in high injury rates among workers. The law covers companies employing 100 or more workers at a single warehouse or 1,000 or more across multiple in the state. Requires companies to ensure that any productivity metrics do not prevent workers from taking meal, rest, or bathroom breaks, and commands that companies give workers notice of quotas and keep records of worker productivity data made available to both workers as well as the state labor agency. I'll tell you, the injuries in Amazon warehouses in some cases are twice that of regular warehouses, and primarily because they push, make sure that the workers, boy, you sit down for 1 second and they penalize you. So this will be interesting to see what happens in other states. All right, quick break. When we come back, the president of the American Postal Workers Union.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by iMed, switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. That's what you want, right? So do this. Go to imed.com/union and you'll learn a whole lot more. Before we get to our first guest, I want to do a shout-out here. This is National Nurses Week. It actually started on Saturday and will wrap up this Friday. Nurses Week celebrates the effort, dedication, and sacrifice that nurses make every day. Nurses are essential members of America's healthcare workforce who provide care through every stage of life, working with patients at their most intimate and vulnerable moments. Boy, we know that. And Nurses Week offers a chance to highlight and celebrate nurses for all that they do. So if you're a nurse, we appreciate what you're doing, especially those of you that are involved in National Nurses United, which represents a whole lot of nurses, especially in California and various states, and the United Steelworkers. A lot of people don't realize that the steelworkers represent about 50,000 healthcare workers. And we salute the steelworkers, of course. They're one of our many sponsors here on the show. So hats off again to all the nurses working hard each and every day. Let's go to our live line right now and welcome someone that we have checked in with a couple of times. And every time we check in with them, there's always an issue. Mark Dimenstein is president of the American Postal Workers Union. He's had that position for about 10 years, 40 years altogether as a postal worker. Talked about this last week. Staffing is a problem. If your mail is delivered late, there's very good reason. There's not enough people working in the postal system. Mark, welcome back to America's Workforce. Why don't you run down the numbers here? Because and again, I say this all the time on the show, the pandemic has changed everything. And the postal system was very much affected. Then it became a political issue. I don't want to get into that right now, but tell me where we are right now. Go ahead.
Well, thanks so much for having me on again. Great to be here. Look, it is there's a lot of challenges. And one of the reasons that the American Postal Workers Union and our activists, our leaders around the country, our many allies were out in the streets last week is there is a serious problem and still a serious problem with staffing. And so our members, postal workers, are extremely dedicated to the mission of serving the people. But we have to have the tools to do it. And so this was a day we were uniting with the people of the country saying, look, we got some problems that need to be addressed. Short staffing, undermined service, longer lines at the retail side, and so on. But it also causes much harsher and hostile working conditions for the postal workers. Because when we're short-staffed, we're under extreme stress, it increases the pressure, it lowers morale, and no worker, postal worker or any other worker, should come to work in a hostile work environment. We should be treated with the respect and dignity that all workers earn. So this was a combination day. Now, I have to say, in all honesty, there were some positive efforts that postal management made to beef up staffing in what's called the mail processing side. But the side where the customer interacts the most with the postal worker, the retail and delivery side, that has not taken place, and it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed quickly.
Okay, Mark, let's talk about the shortage. Where are we now, and where should we be in order to get proper delivery here?
Well, with thousands and thousands of workers less on the retail side than we were 10 and 15 years ago. And a lot of what's feeding this is this massive turnover of postal workers when they get hired because of the working conditions, because of the hostility. Postal job's not easy. And a lot of the people that we represent work 24/7, a lot of night work, a lot of weekend, a lot of holiday work, and if people aren't trained right, if people aren't treated right, people don't stay. So according to the Office of Inspector General, there's almost a 60% turnover in the new hire side on the Postal Service. And part of what feeds the turnover is the entry-level job is not as good as it used to be. People come in on what's called a non-career basis. The wages are not as good. The benefits are not as good. The future is not as good. And so people don't stay. And, of course, the short staffing that we're talking about also feeds that vicious cycle. So management really has to deal with the whole retention problem. There's been some efforts to get a better path to career employment, but it really hasn't yet deeply affected this turnover rate. And then when there's this constant churn, there's not enough people. For example, we represent people in the retail side, and many retail post offices are staffed with just one or two people. Mm-hmm. If something happens that morning, there's a car accident, there's an emergency, somebody gets sick, somebody has to go to the hospital, whatever, there needs to be enough staffing to cover that. And what happens, unfortunately, is there's often not. Someone can't come to work. That post office is closed that day. That's wrong. It has to be fixed. But it all comes back to beefing up the staffing, make sure there's enough relief in, for instance, on the retail side, so the customers constantly get the kind of service they need and deserve and are promised under the law.
Mark, these new hires, you said that 60% of them are gone. Is that like in the first year that they're hired?
Yeah, the turnover rate that the Office of Inspector General talked about is a yearly retention rate. So if we're talking about 50 or 60% turnover, that's that year.
Wow. Is there any effort to say, hey, come on, okay, this is rough. Can you stick it out? Does that go on?
Yes. And in our last round of collective bargaining, we actually made some positive advances. I think management approached this in a good faith because they see they have a problem, is that we do have a better path to a career opportunity. So, for instance, in most cases, a non-career postal employee, if they haven't made career by other means, after 2 years, they will automatically be converted to career. But in that two-year period, if people aren't treated right, if people are not respected, if the staffing is such that it causes this undue stress, then people aren't going to stay. There's a lot of other opportunities out there.
So the picture you're painting here, Mark, yeah, that first year is pretty brutal. But if you can stick it out for 2 years, you might be elevated to the next level there. I get that. This toxic work environment, I need some explaining on that. What's going on with the supervisors there?
Well, it's been a longstanding problem in the Postal Service. It's not all one way or the other. I've worked for plenty of good supervisors that were rowing together to make sure the people got the service that they need and the service that they deserve. But there's also a large element in the Postal Service, and it's been historical, that rule by bullying, intimidation. There's a lot of harassment, sexual harassment, in our view, is on the rise. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed fundamentally. We sometimes can get an individual problem fixed. Postal management at the highest level sometimes will address an individual problem, but it doesn't fundamentally change the environment. We call it whack-a-mole. So you have a problem, you whack it here, but it's coming up everywhere else. And we're asking management, we're demanding of management, enough is enough. We want a zero tolerance policy when it comes to abusive supervisors. We don't want them shuffled around. We don't want them moved around. We want them taken out of supervision. And we want supervisors to be properly trained and implementing a true respect and dignity policy in relation to postal workers. That'll not only help the postal workers, it'll help the people of the country and the kind of service that they get.
So if a supervisor or any kind of manager is charged with, say, you mentioned sexual harassment, let's use that, instead of being disciplined, they're moved to another location? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I'm not saying that supervisors are never disciplined, but more often they're not. More often they are not. And often if there's an abusive supervisor or manager in one area, often they will move them rather than take them out of the system. And when we say take them out of the system, we talk about taking them out of the managerial ranks.
Yeah,
we have people jeered at work. It ties back to the short staffing. There's not enough staffing. It's hard to get the mail up. It's hard to get the mail out. We have instances where supervisors would jeer the employees publicly in front of other employees because they're not getting the work done fast enough. Well, the work isn't being done fast enough because there's not enough human beings and there's not enough workers to do that work.
So, Mark, who's going to help you on this? I mean, the postal system is like an independent agency. I mean, can you go to Congress and say, hey, we've got some issues here? What's the next step in all this?
Well, we're hoping that there was a powerful message sent last week on Workers' Memorial Day, which highlights the question of workplace safety.
Right.
We're hoping that message will be heeded. We took it to the streets after many other efforts. We, for instance, in our contract, we negotiated a task force to try to address these problems. It isn't working. We've had a lot of conversations with upper level management all the way to the Postmaster General. It isn't changing yet. So this was taking it to another level, and we're going to see what happens. Now, certainly we have many friends in Congress on both sides of the aisle that are on our side on many issues, but this is a tough issue to legislate. Certainly Congress can bring attention to the problem. At the local level, city councils, county commissioners, state houses can certainly bring attention to the staffing issue and highlight that look, there's some areas of the country where people are just getting mail delivered one or two or three days a week. That goes back to staffing and the local entities, our local political representatives, our many community organizations, they certainly bring attention to this problem. And when there's focus when the problem is, you know, that when there's a laser focus on the problem, often the post office will come in and try to fix it right there. But they need to fix it in a broad sense.
Mm-hmm. You know, I get my mail sometimes at 8 o'clock at night. It wasn't like that some years ago. And we got a great. Now, this is a different union, I know. That's a letter carrier.
That's right.
That's a letter carrier
right.
And all that. But it's all part of the system. It's all part of the system.
That's right.
And it has changed dramatically. Now, getting back to the rallies that you had, and you did this right on Workers' Memorial Day, which was April 28th. I see seven sites nationwide. How did you come up with the various cities where you did the rallies? Was there some strategic planning in that?
Well, yes and no. We had somewhere around 60 rallies. What we did is we had a three-pronged day. The postal workers themselves filled out surveys prior to the day and during the day, internal union surveys, so that we can better assess how the workforce is feeling about the workforce environment and what they suggest for changes. Two is we stickered up that day in workplaces all over the country. That was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of workplaces. Postal workers demand respect and dignity. Stop the harassment. And then the third prong was a number of public rallies where we united with the people of the country around the staffing issue. So your specific question of where did we choose it, we left it up to the local unions, and we have locals all over the country. And many of the locals combined into one rally. For instance, in the Philadelphia area, a number of the locals from around that area all the way to Harrisburg participated in one rally. So we really left that up to the various states and the various locals.
Gotcha. Mark Dimenstein joining us on our live line today. He is president of the American Postal Workers Union, APWU.org is the website. We'll continue with him. I want to talk about postal banking. Yeah, we need some help when it comes to the banking sector, especially with what's been going on the last month or so. Matt Biggs will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at imed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit imed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. So please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Mark Dimenstein. Mark, president of the American Postal Workers Union. We're talking about the staffing shortages here, but I want to get into postal banking. I remember the last time you and I had a conversation on this, you were really, really driving it. And now, with these crazy bank failures, I think it's front and center right now. Why don't you explain? And I guess this is something that happened years ago. Kind of, why don't you refresh what happened and what you're trying to do here, Mark? Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, the Postal Service, the U.S. Postal Service, had a savings bank for over 60 years. And it served the people of the country in a really important way. Now, in the mid-1960s, the banking lobby became powerful enough where that ended. Now, it's interesting to note that throughout huge swaths of the world, the posts provide basic banking services. It could be small loans, it could be bill paying, and so on. So it's really something that's needed. So there's almost 60 to 80 million people, according to the U.S. Postal Office of Inspector General. There's between 60 and 80 million people that are either unbanked or they're underbanked. They either have no access to financial services or they get stuck in this predatory payday lending, check cashing industry. It's a huge burden on the working class and particularly the low income side of the working class. Here you have a public agency trusted in every community that already provides some basic financial services. The post office, for instance, provides money orders. That's a basic financial service. And then on top of it, you have a new focus, as you mentioned, with these bank failures. And I just had an op-ed that said, okay, here's the private side. Here's where greed leads us on the banking side. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a public option? It's not about just making money and profit for the Wall Streeters and the hedge funders and the bankers, but about serving the people. And wouldn't it be much safer and much more stable for the people of the country? And I think the answer is yes. So we're huge advocates, as most people you talk to will be, and raise it. And people say, that's a great idea. I'd love to do some basic financial services at the post office. So we're focused on starting with some smaller steps. To get actually a postal bank back in the United States would take legislative change. And that's certainly a challenge. It's a challenge that we're ready for and that we plan to organize for, but that's a longer run challenge. But in the shorter run, the post office can do, we believe, under the purviews of the law, they could do some basic financial services, paycheck cashing, electronic bill paying, ATMs, and so on. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with postal management to try some pilot programs. They seem willing to try some things. And unfortunately, the Postal Regulatory Commission, which is a bureaucratic agency that regulates the Postal Service, threw some obstacles in our path. So we're trying to see if we can deal with those things. And it goes back to the idea that the Postal Service can only do postal products, and this isn't really a postal product. We think it is. We think they have the right to do it, and we know the people of the country need it. So we have this wonderful public mission. The Postal Service is defined as an agency and an institution that's here to bind the people of the country together. And basic financial services is part of that. So just imagine to be able to go in the post office and cash a paycheck without getting ripped off. Wouldn't right. that be really a good thing? You pointed out right in the beginning, this banking crisis is real, and it ought to raise up the need for a public entity, and the Postal Service is right there, a public trusted entity that can provide basic financial services, and it would help the people of the country, and it would help the Postal Service, because the Postal Service needs revenue. Revenue would come in with this kind of plan, but the people would not be ripped off like they are in this predatory payday lending industry that, as some people have defined it, would make the mafia blush with the kind of rates and the kind of interest rates that they charge. It's a form of legal loan sharking. And the Postal Service as a public entity could really help put a stop to that, which would really help the people of the country greatly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those check cashing places, you're looking at like 28 to 50% interest rate, depending on how long it goes. It's sad. I didn't realize that number was that high. 60 to 80 million people in this country have no access to the financial sector because of the position.
Yeah, they have either no access or what they call the underbanked, which is the access of, quotes, financial services, but it's the predatory payday lending check cashing industry, which is an absolute ripoff for the hardworking people of this country.
So, Mark, you mentioned a pilot program. Do we need legislation to start something like that?
We don't, in our opinion. The post office does have some broad rights to try some things out, see how they work, and then decide whether to broaden it. Now, when they broaden it, the Postal Regulatory Commission does have some regulatory oversight. But we believe, and the Office of Inspector General of the Postal Service, in a report in 2014, actually defined four or five or six areas where they believe the Postal Service already has the authority under the law to provide certain services. For example, we already do money orders. Why can't that be brought up into the electronic era where those bills can be paid electronically right through the post office? It's the same thing as a money order, but it's an electronic money order. We believe those things the Postal Service already has the right to do under the law.
Well, you know you're going to need more staff for something like this if it goes goes down that road. And I know you're fighting with that right now. But anyway, these are good ideas. They really are good ideas. I mean, to your point, so many people are getting screwed out there. Let's make that process more comfortable for them so they can go to their local post office and not get ripped off. I like that a lot. Mark, you're always good to come on this show. Thank you so much for joining us. I love that idea. Let's stay in touch on this. Let's see if we can make it happen, okay?
Happy to do it. Always a pleasure to come on. Greetings to all of your hardworking listeners out there making the world go round.
Mark Dimenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. You can find more at apwu.org. We're going to take a quick break. Matt Biggs is with the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, and he is coming up next. We'll be right back after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number two. This is President's Day on the show. We have the president of the American Postal Workers Union. Now we have the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees, and that would be Mr. Matt Biggs. We had Matt on the show earlier this year, but right now we wanted to bring him back because of this debt ceiling talk. Hey, Matt, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing good, doing good. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you know, before we get into the issue at hand here, why don't you refresh our listeners on your union? Last count here, I'm looking at, 90,000? Is that how many we have in your union?
Yeah, 90,000 members in the public, the federal, and the private sector, mostly like white-collar workers, engineers, scientists, techs, huge in the federal government and defense and energy sectors. We also have a lot of energy workers in Canada. Actually, I'm in Montreal right now for the Canadian Labor Congress convention. But yeah, that's our. And then in aerospace, we're huge in aerospace. Have a huge local representing Boeing workers and Spirit Aerosystem workers.
It's funny you mentioned Canada. Different kind of labor laws over there, isn't there?
I was giving a talk yesterday saying, in the United States, we look to Canada and want to, those of us in the labor movement want to emulate their labor laws. So, yeah.
Whole different ball game there. Whole different ball. Well, we got a lot of work to do, but I want to talk about this debt ceiling. And, the horror stories are out there daily, but let's run down. I saw this post on your website, and I want to elaborate a little bit more because it seems like there's some members in Washington that want to burn the house down. They don't care. They want to hold the president's feet to the fire, and obviously they're going to blame him if it goes that way. But we're talking about a huge financial collapse here. Why don't you break it down? I saw the part about the American Rescue Plan and pensions. Can you pick it up from there?
Yeah, Speaker McCarthy, he made a deal with the most fringe right-wing elements of his party to become speaker. I mean, we saw the circus that happened vote after vote after vote with this guy. What he agreed to was to refuse, one of the things, to refuse to increase the debt ceiling without really draconian cuts to the budget and to spending. Same thing is true for the annual spending bills, but this debt ceiling has to be increased by June 1st. So this is the immediate thing that needs to be addressed right away, staring him in the face. And yet he's running the house. That's the problem. They have the majority. They control the agenda. And this guy has agreed to draconian cuts. I mean, they want to take spending back to FY 2022 levels, for example. I mean, that's ridiculous. You can't run these agencies cutting spending like that. I mean, it could – at the same time, they want to cut that spending. They don't want to cut defense spending. So figure that out. So defense spending's not cut. Might even be increased. And so you think of the non-discretionary spending that's left across government agencies. I mean, you're looking at upwards of a 22% cut across government agencies. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's outrageous, and it's not doable.
Yeah, these pension plans, this is one that's, mm-hmm. we got a lot of folks, especially in the trades, that are mm-hmm. concerned about these multi-employer plans. And right now, I'm reading 42 applications are under review. Over 100 pension plans are waiting their turn for financial assistance. So mm-hmm. it's my understanding if they don't raise the debt ceiling, all of that comes to a halt then? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, all of this spending would be in jeopardy, including the pension plans. That's one of the concessions they want. They want to reverse the spending that's already been approved, passed by Congress, signed into law by President Biden, that helps to fund these pension plans. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions of workers and retirees. That would be impacted by these draconian cuts. I mean, these are people's pensions, right? So, and not only pensions. I mean, we're talking about Social Security and Medicare also. I mean, they want cuts to those programs in exchange for an increase in the debt ceiling.
It's amazing. Yeah, I read the list. You mentioned Social Security. Mm-hmm. There'll be cutbacks in field offices. The VA mm-hmm. will be affected. Yeah. And, you know, these are the same people that support the veterans. You know that. But when it comes to issues like yeah. this, that seems to be glossed over. What are you hearing right now? Now, I know you're in Montreal and all that. Is this a game of chicken? I mean, we've gone down this road before. I know when Obama was in the White House. And I know a lot of people were not happy that he was elected, and they were playing with him back in, I believe it was 2010, 2011, to see who was going to jump. What's your take on it? I mean, you've been around Washington for a good chunk of your life. What's your view on this, Matt?
Yeah, I've been around a long time, and you know, the debt ceiling is something until recently that lawmakers on both sides of the aisle realized. I mean, it had to be increased. Even if you're a deficit hawk, they understood that if you don't increase the debt ceiling, you're looking at dire ramifications. I'll be honest with you. I mean, as a president of a union, I'm worried about it. I mean, news came out today that 43 Senate Republicans signed a letter saying they will not vote for a debt ceiling increase unless there's cuts to spending. I mean, what does that mean? That's ridiculous. And it's in the Senate where people are supposed to be more reasonable. It's worrisome. I mean, because we represent federal employees. So the first ones on the chopping block would be federal workers and retirees that collect Social Security and Medicare. Senator Rick Scott from Florida, several months ago, he had a proposal that called for, just look at his proposal. I mean, this is what they want. 25% reduction of the federal workforce. He wanted to term limit federal workers, cap federal pay, cut federal pensions, cut federal health care, go after Social Security and go after Medicare. I mean, that is the laundry list of cuts that the Republicans are looking to extract in exchange for a debt ceiling increase. Now, will they get all of those? No, but will they get something? I mean, you know, when Obama was in, you mentioned Obama. You know what ended up happening? There was they had sequestration in exchange for increasing the debt ceiling, and that resulted in furlough days for federal workers. They had to take furlough days. You know, so it's a problem. I will say this too. You know, these very same people didn't seem to have a problem with the debt ceiling when Trump was in office, and he ran our national debt up $7.8 trillion. His tax cuts for corporations and the rich, that tax cut legislation, that increased the debt by almost $2 trillion in and of itself.
Right.
And they didn't have a problem doing it then. Now they have a problem doing it.
Matt, I announced on the show on Friday, there's a rep, you probably know the name, Andy Biggs. He's a
he's terrible.
staunch right winger in Arizona. He wants to cut OSHA down to zero, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which, by the way, and I didn't realize this, they don't represent those in the public sector. There's like 8 million in the public sector that are not covered mm-hmm. by OSHA, but there might be another program. But they've been trying for years to expand that. But, I mean, this mm-hmm. is the mentality that we're dealing. I mean, and the record proves that OSHA has had a dramatic effect since it started in 1970 on worker safety. There's people alive today because of OSHA, but that somehow doesn't seem to mean anything to these individuals. So I don't know. As far as your union, again, 90,000 strong, do you have any idea how this would affect you if they burn down the house in Washington? Do we have any data on that right now, Matt?
Well, it would have a tremendous impact on one-third of our union directly, right? The federal workers. I mean, and these are workers that they're working on the space program at NASA. They're helping to they work at these Navy shipyards, all four of them. Working on nuclear subs and alike. I mean, this is our national defense we're talking about. They work in the energy industry at Tennessee Valley Authority. You talk about our members that work at Boeing and at Spirit. These folks are they're designing and building the airplanes. I mean, think about the safety of the FAA that oversees and has oversight of aerospace manufacturing. I mean, that would get cut by 22%. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What about the air traffic controllers? We don't represent them, but NACA does. What about them that control the traffic in the air? I mean, these are real, tangible, real life examples of what will happen if they don't increase the debt ceiling. Moody says that 7 million lost jobs. Well, we'll go into an immediate recession. Huge interest rate spike, right? Credit cards, mortgages, auto loans, 401ks. I mean, unfortunately, mm-hmm. now in this country and in the United States, most people don't have a defined pension anymore. They have a defined contribution pension, and those are 401ks. Think what would happen to people's pensions and retirements. The stock market would plummet. So yeah. These are real, real dire circumstances we're facing. And yet, these Republicans in the Congress, for the most part, they don't seem to care. No. They're willing to play chicken.
They're basically playing chicken with our lives right now. It's hard to believe we have come to this, but I know about the political divide in Washington, but you know what? This has to change, and it has to happen, like, overnight. Very sad, very sad. Well, I'm sure your members are aware what's going on. You keep doing what you're doing. Maybe next time we'll have some positive thing. Maybe talk about growing your union. Get up to that 100,000 mark. How's that sound?
Indeed. Let's hope so. Indeed.
Okay. Matt Biggs, president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, IFPTE.org is the website. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, I always end this show talking about who's going to be on the show tomorrow and wishing you all a wonderful day. Well, today's a little bit different, and for very good reason, because today we said goodbye to Herbert McTaggart, who we all knew as Bud. If you knew anything about Bud, there were three devotions in his life of 85 years. First, to his wife, Madonna, his seven children, and the union, all unions. Because of Bud, we have this show today called America's Workforce. You see, back in 1993, Bud, along with his dear friend Dick Acton of the Cleveland AFL-CIO, decided we need a show to talk about workers and the importance of belonging to a union. Because of his connections, Bud made sure the unions had a voice on this show. He linked up with Jared Borky and BMA Media. The rest is history. Bud had contacts locally and nationally. He always carried a small address book in his pocket with papers stuck between the pages and phone numbers scribbled in. He was not one to embrace technology, especially the internet and email. Didn't trust it, he often said, but he managed to get the job done anyway. Bud was president of his local of the International Typographical Union, executive assistant to the Cleveland AFL-CIO, and the Solidarity Health Network. Bud was a staunch supporter of universal health care. He knew politics and politicians coveted his advice. At one point, Bud served as the labor advisor to Congressman Ed Fehan. He got that job because Ed knew Bud was the guy that got him to Washington. Bud knew how important it was for people to work together for the common good, Democrat, Republican, it didn't matter. What mattered was a better result for workers, union and non-union. Because that's what a good labor leader does. When I was asked to host this show back in 1998, it was a live show from 7 to 8 in the morning on 1300 AM WERE in Cleveland, Ohio. Well, that show has really exploded since then. And I could recall many times I talked to Bud every day, sometimes 2 to 3 times, about the guests and the direction of the show. Oftentimes the Irish in him flared up if things didn't go the right way, but in the end, it all worked out. He cared about the show and he cared about the people around him. It made me work harder so he could be proud of the show that he helped create. So, Bud McTaggart, you were a big part of my life and will always be an inspiration to me and to those that you embraced over the years. We're talking over 60 years fighting for what's right. Bud McTaggart, rest in peace, my brother. Rest in peace.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.